I'm Frank Browning, and this is Fresh Air. A year ago last Christmas, Bill McPherson, the novelist, flew to Germany with a friend. They wanted to see the Berlin Wall before it was finally obliterated into a pile of rocks, a last gruesome monument of the Cold War. Then they spent several days lounging along the Grand Canal in Venice. A bit of politics, a bit of history, a bit of luxury. And then home, or that's the way it was supposed to be. But along the way, Bill McPherson, or rather his imagination, got caught in Romania. The collapse of the Ceausescu dictatorship and the execution of Ceausescu and his wife galvanized all Europe through Christmas week. McPherson's friend returned to the United States, but he stayed on, drawn into the maelstrom of revolution, terror, and hope, which have marked the Eastern European country for the last year. Welcome to Fresh Air, Bill.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be here.
Bill, you used to be a newspaper man. You wrote editorials for the Washington Post, but for the last decade or so, you've been known as a novelist and a rather elegant stylist of character and scene. What drew you back to reporting, and of all places, to a land that, like Romania, that seems almost medieval?
Well, that's a good question. It is an almost medieval place. I was in the middle of my third novel, and I seemed to be having a little trouble with it. When I was not happy with what I was doing, and when I took that trip, and I was immediately sucked into this situation that I wanted to understand, and I suppose one of the things that attracted me to it was the kind of mystery that was there, and the I guess I would say the evil that I saw. I think that's the only word to describe it.
The evil?
Yeah. It's kind of an evil place in some ways. I mean, not an evil place. You see evil in the world, you see it clearly in Romania. You don't see it so clearly in the United States or elsewhere.
What was the first sign of evil?
Well, let me tell you, I'm not sure that this was the first sign, but this was an obvious sign. Late at the end of February, about 1 or 1:30 in the afternoon, I was passing a footbridge in Timișoara, and I noticed a crowd on the bridge, or a few people, not a crowd. And I stopped and went over, and I looked down at what they were seeing, and it was a man who had apparently committed suicide. I was horrified. I'd never seen anything like that before. But as I was looking down, he was lying on the bank of the river, this small river. And as I was looking down at him, I thought, something seems strange about it. And I thought, he's not blue. And then I thought, I thought, you're supposed to be blue if you hang yourself. But then I thought, his position is very strange. He was in rigor mortis at that point. This was 1 or 2 in the afternoon. And it was not the position of a man who had been hanging. And then I saw that there didn't appear to be any bruises or swelling around his neck, although the rope was still there. And I asked someone, they said they'd heard he'd been cut down and put on the riverbank. It became clear to me that this was not a suicide. The next day, or a couple days later, there was a small item in the local newspaper, maybe 3 or 4 lines, saying a man had been found on the riverbank. Apparently, it was not a suicide. I've tried to find out the man's name. I do know his first name. I know a little something about him. But very little. I know he was a member of the first revolutionary government in Timișoara in December 1989, and that for some reason or other he was killed. Whether he was an informer, whether it was some kind of rivalry, I don't know. But that's what I mean by evil, I guess. And then the miners, of course, when the miners came to Bucharest.
Now, that's last summer when the revolutionary government brought miners in to break up a student occupation in the town square, right?
Right.
Paint for us a picture of that scene and how you came to witness it and what happened to you.
The night before, there'd been shooting on and off all night. There was great turmoil. The police headquarters was in flames. It's a question as to who set the police headquarters in flames. I mean, there's evidence that indicates it was a provocation on the part of the government. But there'd been great commotion and turmoil that the night of June 13th to June 14th. At 4:20 in the morning, the last shooting stopped. At 4:40, I mean, I remember this so clearly, I decided I would go to sleep. I could lie down. And I went to lie down on the couch in this room, overlooking, in the Intercontinental Hotel, overlooking the University Square, where the demonstrations had taken place. And as I was drifting off, I thought I heard a strange noise. And I thought, what can that be? And I thought, oh, forget it, because I didn't really, I was tired, I was exhausted. I'd actually been dodging bullets the night before. I just wanted to go to sleep. And I thought, no, get up and look. Why else are you here? So I got up and I dragged myself out to the balcony, and I didn't know what I was seeing at first. It was just in that light before dawn. I mean, it was very, very dim. It was very hard to see. I looked down and I couldn't tell what I was seeing at first, but I thought, in fact, it looked like fireflies. All these miners, maybe 500, with their lamps, their miners' lamps, flickering, and this strange swish of these sticks they were carrying. And they were chanting Golan, Golan. Golan is a sort of word for hooligan, which is what the president of the country had described the people in University Square as hooligans. And all you could see were these white sticks kind of flashing about, and these lights flickering. They kept flickering them on and off. And then as it got a little lighter, I mean, within 2 or 3 minutes, you could see that there were several hundred men in their mining outfits, and that they were, I thought, my God, they're miners. And there was a little pause, a space between them, and then another 500. Within an hour or two, less than that. Within an hour, there were thousands of miners in University Square. And they were looking for Golan. And they went into the, first I saw them run into the university building, which faces the square, and from the balcony of that building, they had, the student protesters had led the protests. They ran into that building. They ran into the Faculty of Architecture, which faces it, and was in the Faculty of Architecture, there was an opposition radio station that was considered particularly offensive. They seized that building. You could see them on the, eventually they got to the roof. You could see them on the roof waving in triumph. And anyone who walked through the square, although God knows why anybody would, but...
Did you go out?
Eventually. The miners arrived. It was actually 5 in the morning when they came to the square. And about... I made a couple little... I went down to the lobby of the hotel thinking I would go out. I looked and thought, maybe I better not. I went a little tiny ways out the door, and I thought I would just see what weapons they were carrying. And I saw the weapons, which were pretty impressive, and I thought, you know, they had drills. I mean, they had these drills. One of them came up to my chest.
They were carrying drills?
Yeah, a miner's drill, you know, and they had pipes and clubs and tree limbs, chains and rubber hoses, just plain chains.
And then they cleared the square.
The square was definitely cleared of everything but miners. But then a little while later, about 9 o'clock, I was with another journalist, and it seemed the violence, the first wave of violence was subsiding somewhat, and we decided it was safe to go out. And these are reasonably safe, so we ventured a little ways out. And these guys, they said everyone they'd beaten up, I talked to one of the guys, or they didn't say beaten up, arrested was how they put it. They were prostitutes, the women were prostitutes, a lot of women were beaten up.
The miners claimed that the women were prostitutes.
Yes, of course, they had no way of knowing, and I mean, it seemed highly unlikely. They looked like fairly normal people to me. They were drug addicts, or they had drugs on them. They had inflammatory political material, and one of them showed me, actually, the inflammatory political material, and it was a copy of the Constitution of the United States, one of the things that the USIA, I guess it is, prints them by the thousands, and he couldn't read.
The miner couldn't read it.
No, he didn't know what it was.
My guest is William McPherson, reporter and novelist. He spent the last year writing about the aftermath of the Romanian Revolution. We'll take a short break. This is Fresh Air. For those of you just tuning in, I'm talking with William McPherson. He spent the last year in Romania preparing a book on the country. What is it that's drawn you, a novelist, a man who really hasn't done this sort of work, to do this particular part of the world? Is there something about the nature of evil that fascinates you in the world?
Well, yes, I suppose. I mean, I think that fascinates most everybody. But also, I guess I left out equally important, more important, is this struggle for freedom. I mean, these people struggling to be free. It's a very basic, a very moving, and in a way, I guess, a very romantic kind of idea. These people who've been oppressed, horribly oppressed, desperately wanting to be free, and also very afraid.
You've spent the better part of a year in Romania.
That's right.
What did people ask you? What did they seek from you?
Oh, they ask me all sorts of things. I mean, they ask me the most amazing things, that questions that I have absolutely no answer to. I mean, they'll ask me how they should how to make the economy work. I mean, I don't know how to make the economy work. I'm not an economist. They ask me, they say, how does democracy work? You know, tell us about democracy. They ask me, how much does your camera cost? They want to know, how much money do you make? How large is your apartment? Do you live in a house? Do you live in an apartment? How much do you pay for rent? And of course, the dollar value, I mean, there's a lot of questions about how much things cost, questions that would be considered quite rude in the United States, but there are simple, genuine curiosity because they want to know how the world works. And they have no, in Romania, prices of things have no relation to cost until October of this year. The end of October, it was possible to take a plane flight from Bucharest to Timișoara for, I believe it was 347 lei, which at the time was the equivalent of $3.47.
$3.47 for a plane ride of that distance.
Yes. I mean, it doesn't pay them to start the engine. And the more people they have on the plane, the more money they must be losing because of the, you know, they use more fuel. Those prices have changed. But they're still very reasonable by Western standards. I mean, the price in Romania does not relate much to the actual cost of producing something.
So do you have the sense of people, you know, slipping out of the cave and looking at you as a person from another world?
Yes, I'm kind of exotic and I'm rich. I mean, I say I'm rich. Any foreigner in Romania is rich. If you have dollars, if you have any dollars, you're rich. I mean, no matter how poor you may feel or no matter what your financial situation really is, in Romania, you are rich and you have freedom. You have a passport. You can leave. These people cannot leave. The wall came down, but of course, now the West is busily erecting another wall to keep people to keep the Eastern Europeans in. It's very, very difficult to get a visa. And even if you do get a visa, where do you, how can you afford to spend, to buy lunch in the West? I mean, you can't. Most people can't.
Bill, let me ask you what you learned about yourself. Bill McPherson, the novelist who went to see what happened to the Romanian Revolution. What happened to you in this last year? What did you learn about yourself?
Well, that's hard to say. I guess one thing I learned is that I'm not a coward, and that was sort of nice to learn.
What do you mean? What do you mean? You learned you were not a coward.
Well, I mean, I did things that I would never have imagined doing. I was in situations that I would never have imagined being in. I never imagined I'd be dodging bullets, for God's sake.
That's right. You went for a vacation in Berlin with a little bit of time in the Grand Canal.
That's right. And then suddenly I'm in Romania with all these, you know, with all these clothes meant for the Grand Canal. I found myself confronted with a very strange situation, a situation that was very mysterious to me, a place where corruption was everywhere, where no one trusted anyone, and there were no facts, only rumors. And I managed to, you know, survive that so far. And even enjoy it. Because I do enjoy it. I mean, nobody is forcing me to be there. I'm fascinated by the country, and I want to understand it better. I think I'll only the way I work, I tend to, when I write, I know what I think when I've written it. And before I write it, I'm not exactly sure what I think.
Well, keep thinking and look over your shoulder frequently.
Okay, thanks, Frank.
My guest has been William McPherson. He's finishing a book on the last year in Romania. An excerpt appeared recently in the literary magazine Granta.